We're going to begin on Chaf Aleph from now with a new parak, Ele Mitziyot. The Mishnah begins with Ele Mitziyot Shelo, Ve'elu Chayav Dechris. So the header for the Mishnah is which items that you have found, lost items which you have found, may you keep for yourself. Which items are you obligated to announce, meaning that you have a mitzvah of Hashavat Veda. What is the point or line which decides when you have to give it back, when you don't have to give it back? That's something called Yeush. That's what Rashi mentions. The first Rashi here on the Mishnah says, Nityashu Abalim. The Balim give up hope of getting it back, then the person can keep the Mitziyah. On the other hand, if the Balim do not give up hope, or they think they can get it back, then there's an obligation on the individual who finds it to be Machriz to announce it and do a Shavat Aveda, to return the item to its rightful owner. Why is it when Nityashu Abalim you don't have to give it back? Rashi says, Hefkerhein. So before we start the parak, just as a quick introduction, if the pivotal decision point about whether you have to give back or not is Yeush Balim, what is the source that Yeush Balim, that Yeush itself allows one to keep the item rather than have to return it to its owner? So Tosus, there's actually a Tosus later on in the Parakon Chav Zayin Amar Aleph, which asks this question. He says, Im Tomar Vaveda Gufa Minalan, how do we know that Yeush works by Aveda? So he says that Yeush Lomar Hachanafka, we learn it from the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'chein Tasel Simlato, when it deals with his Simla, his Beged, his clothing. So it says, Mas Simla Miuchedet Sheish Bas Siman, just like a Simla Beged has identifying features to it, Ve'en Abalim Yashim, and they don't give up hope from it, Ela Tovim Sheyach Ziru Alehem. They ask for it, they publicize, they look for people to return it to them. To see my name, I buy the features or the unique feature set that has with this bigot. Afilu, I simanim lav daraisa. Even if you say simanim not daraisa, bein machzim ele beidim, even we only give it back with eidim, mikol makol yafina misimla, the dafka davar sheish bo siman chayav lachzir. Only something that has identifying marks in there, you're obligated to give back. To yedei sheish bo siman, imtza eidim. Shemar lahem makirim atem simla sheli. Because only with simanim will you find other people who can also identify the shirt or identify the unique features of this baguette of this clothing. So Tosfos says that the source is out of the Pasuk V'chein Taseh L'Simlato. On the other hand, there is also Rashi quotes it in Bava Kamma, there's a Yerushalmi that sounds, we're actually going to quote a Braisa on tomorrow's daf that sounds somewhat similar to this about Shatfanar. But the Yerushalmi says that me on the Pasuk it says that he lost it and someone else finds it. That's only when it's lost from him and it's found or some others have the ability to know about it or have the ability to know about it. When the Balim give up hope, it's lost from everyone. Right, so now there are many actually Achronim like Reb Chaim and others who believe you actually need both Pesukim, because there are actually two stages in the Aveda. One which permits you to keep the Aveda and not return it, and a secondary source that tells you that you're patur from paying for it, that maybe you're allowed to keep it, but you have to search to find and compensate the Balim. On the other hand, so you need both Pesukim, one to teach you, or both sources in Yeush, one to teach you that Yeush gives you permission to keep it, and the second one to tell you that even when you keep it, you don't have to pay for it. Now, how does Yeush function? Over here, we just saw in Rashi, Rashi says Yeush functions by saying it's Hefker, and that's one of the deot, some of the Rishonim and Achronim believe, that actually the way Yeush works, or Yeush Balim works, is actually it becomes Hefker. It's as if you're a Mefkir, as if you give up ownership over the item, and you're Mefkir the item. There's some Achronim even want to explain, when you say it's Mefkir, it's not really that you're Mefkir, because you don't really have the ability to be Mefkir, it's really against your will, and it's not because you really want it to be mafkir, it's only because it's lost now. So they say, because you give up hope, the Torah then was mafkir. I mean, they take over where the Torah takes over where you left off and said, oh, I have no hope of getting it back, and the Torah then is makes it into a Masa Hefker and makes it into Hefker. That's one possibility of how Yeush works. That's Rashi seems to say here, it's Nyashua Balim Hefker and it becomes Hefker. Once they give up hope, it becomes like Hefker. Rashi doesn't even qualify that. It sounds like it's Hefker Lagamre. The other possibility, again, is that if the individual still has, the owner or the previous owner of the item still has some sort of connection to the Aveda, but because he has Yeush over here, it's somehow removed or distanced or reduced his ownership in the object. And because of that reduced ownership in the object, the Torah then allows the other individual to take it, or allows somehow the other individual to take possession of it. The question, or the nafkamina between these, one of them will be whether it can be chozer on the Yeush. I mean, that it becomes that it's hefker, once you've been mafkir it, you can't take it back into your possession unless you actually pick up the object and take it back into possession. So once you have Yeush, it becomes hefker. On the other hand, if Yeush is something that generates a reduced ownership in the item, maybe there's a possibility that you could reassert that ownership if you don't give up hope. If you start to have hope that you get it back, then maybe you could reassert ownership. But just a brief introduction to how Yeush works, and then what it is, and again, we start from Rashi, and Yashu Abelim, hefker hein. Okay, now, the mission begins to list. Which mitziyot may you keep? matzah perot mefuzarim, if he finds fruits that are scattered out, right? Ma'ot mefuzarot, or money that's scattered out, krichot b'shut rabim, or you have little piles of fruits, grains, produce out in the b'shut rabim. So there, the b'shut rabim is only modifying krichot. That's what Tosa says. It's only modifying krichot. Actually, it's not clear whether it's modifying everything before or just the krichot. But again, Rashi explains this mishnah according to Rabbah. We're going to see that in tomorrow's daf. That because it's in Reshut Rabim, any siman that's on the object will get erased, even though that's only the de'achah, that's only the Rabbah. Tosos, actually, this long Tosos here at the beginning of the perek, goes through the trouble to explain the mishnah, which the Gemara will do on tomorrow's daf and the extending daf beyond that, that Rabbah and Rava argue about how exactly to explain this mishnah, and Tosos goes through the effort to explain the whole mishnah according to Rabbah and then according to Rava. Both opinions, although Rashi here was only explaining it according to Rabbah. So now, krichot b'shut rabim, with these little paz b'shut rabim, v'gulei d'vela, or pressed figs, kikarot shel nachtum, baker's bread, machuzot shel dagim, these are strings of fish, v'chatichot shel basar, and cuts of meat, v'gizei tzemer, and then sheared wool, alukuchim mimidinatam, wool that's found, commonly found in this area, v'anitzei pishtan, also flax, bundles of flax, or pieces of flax, v'lishonot shel argaman, lishonot shel argaman, Rashi says, is combed wool that's dyed the color of argaman, dyed purple. According to Rabbi Meir, all of these belong to him because none of them have any unique feature set. They're not distinct in any manner. And because, like by Krichot and Reshut Rabim, there's no way that the person is going to be able to assume that they would get this item back. Meaning that if you buy something from the bakery, then everybody else bought from the bakery. If it's dropped, there's no way for you to identify the bakery's baked goods, because the bakery's baked goods, everyone else has. So it could be dropped from anyone. It doesn't have to be from you. And each of these items, the Gemara is actually going to go through them, but explain why they are not considered to have a unique sign or siman or way to identify them. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Mark, anything that has a unique feature, an unusual feature about it, then you have to announce it. Ketzad, what's a case like this? Matzah gul ubetocho cheres. He has igulei dvela, he has pressed figs, and then he finds a piece of pottery. Kikar, or he has a loaf of bread, ubetocho maot, and there's money inside of it. Since that's something out of the ordinary, that's something that's unique, it's not common to every loaf of bread or common to every pressed fig circle. Therefore, you have to announce it because maybe it was either intentionally placed there, we'll see that actually in Tudapim, or it was intentionally placed there, or possibly because even if it fell there accidentally, that the owner might know about the fact that it's there. But because of that and that unique feature, you have to announce it in order to allow someone the chance to get it back, because that person might be relying on the fact that there is this unique feature, and therefore they will not have Yeush. Anything that's clay and furia, you don't have to announce. The Gemara will explain what clay and furia is, so we'll leave that to the time of the Gemara. Now the Gemara is going to challenge some of these cases in our Mishnah. It says, Matzah peirot mefuzarim v'kamo. When it says they're fruits that are laid out, what does it mean? That fruits are just distributed over an area. How much, or how big a volume of fruits, how much space, what are your dining plants? Amar b'yisa kav barbamot. There has to be a kav worth of peirot in a space of four amot. Hey chidami. So I want to explain, all right? Let's understand this. Iderach nefila. If they are just scattered about, I mean, they look like they fell off of somebody. Afilu tuba. Nami. Even more than that, you should be able to take, and it should be classified as Yehush Balim. Because if they fell, then the Balim, first of all, were not aware of it. They weren't placed there intentionally, and they don't assume that they're going to get back these fruits. Viderach inuach. If they're placed intentionally, meaning they're piled up, it looks like someone intentionally placed them there. Afilu batzir miachi nami lo. Even if it's less, or a lesser amount of fruits, you should be able to take them, because since they were placed there intentionally, the Balim are assuming that they're going to come back to this location and pick them up again. So Amar Rav Ukva Rachama b'chnashad b'dori askinan. We're dealing with actually a unique case over here. The unique case is that the Balim, or the owners, along with the other people of the town or the other people of the neighborhood, used to pile up or bring in their fruits or grains from the produce from the harvest, and they used to make a dish, and they used to make a huge pile and gather them together in a single location. So now, after they finish piling it all up, they start to move it out, or sell it, or move it out. When they move it out, they take the large portion of it out, but there's some fruits that are left behind. So the question is now, when they leave these fruits behind, do they intend on returning to pick up those fruits? Or are they assuming at that point that they've given up, they took what they wanted to take from here, and what they left behind, they just say, all right, it's not worth my effort to take it. So how do we know? What's the point at which we say they've given up hope, or they just don't assume they're going to get it back, versus where's the point where they still say, it's significant enough for me to return? So that's what it is. says, Kav Barbamot, when it comes to a Kav with distributed over a space of four amot, the Nafish Tachayu, since it's a lot of work to come back and come back and pick that up over that Shetach, over that space, Lo Tarachin Shei Velo Hadar Ati Vishakiluhu. So he won't come back and pick them up. Of course, Mafkiruhu. So then he'll be Mafkir them, since it's not worth his while, worth his effort to return. Both because the effort for so little, plus the effort over such a large area to have to gather them in, he's going to be Mafkir them. But Sirihachi, if it's less than this, Tarach Lahadar, then he will come back and pick them up. He's going to say it's worth my while to go back, either because it's the ease of picking them up because they're in a smaller space, or because of the value. I mean, there's a larger quantity, and that larger quantity makes it more valuable for him to return. Now, the Gemara is going to clarify this. Is what is the point at which is the decision point? Does the decision point revolve around value, or does the decision point revolve around effort? And that's what Gemara is going to try to clarify now. Bari Rabbi Yirmiyah, Chatzi Kav B'Shtei Amot. What about half a kav in two amot? If you have half, I mean, if you have four amot in a single kav, now what happens if you cut the space in half and you cut the volume in half? What happens? Ma'u kav barba amot time amai. What's the reason that within a kav in four amot he gives up hope? Is mishum davish tachayu, because it's a pain in the neck. Meaning that it's too much effort to go back and collect all those fruits over that large shetach, over that large area. Chatzi kav b'shtei amot, kevin d'lofish tachayu lo mafkalu. A kav over two amot, which is a smaller area, is much easier for him to collect all that fruit in a single shot, or to do with less exertion, and because of that, he won't be mafkir them. Or, the problem with kav b'arabot is it's just not valuable enough for him to return. Right, so too, by kav, half a kav and two amot certainly is going to be less valuable, and he won't return. So here the Gemara is trying to query and understand whether the issue is value, or is the issue exertion or effort? That's the question. Here the Gemara doesn't know. So now the Gemara switches to the other side. What about kabayim mishmona amot? What happens if you double the quantity and double the space? Is the reason by the form of because the exertion, the effort is too much and doesn't make sense? Choshken kabayim mishmona amot, and the effort needed to collect a kabayim over eight amot is going to be more extensive, and because of that, the person would never go back for them. So since it's much more effort, he would definitely would be mafkir them. Maybe the reason my kav by arba amot is because it's just not enough value to make it worth his while to return. But kabayim b'shmona amot, but a kabayim which is double the quantity, that value already would make it worthwhile for him. He wouldn't come back, and he wouldn't leave them because it's worth his time to come back for something that valuable. Now, the Gemara continues to query, what about kav shushimin? What about a kav of sesame seeds? Ba'arba amot. Now, ma'u, kav ba'arba amot time amai mishum delo chashive. The whole reason has to do with a value question. And a kav in four amot is not so valuable. But shushimim came into chashive lo mafkul. But the sesame seeds, since they are more valuable, much more valuable than a standard kav of other vegetation, other produce, therefore he would come back, even though it's a small, the same measurement, but that same measurement has more value, carries more value, and therefore he'd return. The problem is that it's a lot of effort, extended effort to pick the items up, and that's why he won't come back. So therefore, by shumshimim, which are tiny little seeds, and you have to collect them over a large space, there certainly the effort is too extensive for him to come back, and he wouldn't come back for those. Even though the value is higher, the effort is so extensive that it's not worth his while. So again, the Gemara is trying to determine, is it value or effort that is making the decision point? Now, the last query of the Gemara, kav tamrei b'arba amot, kav rimoni b'arba amot. What about a kav of dates and the kav of rimonim overextended an area of four amot? Mo, kav b'arba amot, time amai. What's the reason by kav amot? Mishum delo chashive. It's not so significant to him. It's not valuable enough. Kav tamrei b'arba amot, kav rimoni b'arba amot nami. So the same thing will be true by these fruits, mishum delo chashive. They have the same standard value as other fruits or produce, and therefore, if it's a kav applies to fruits and vegetation or to produce, so too would be true by tamrei or rimoni. Kav tamrei bar mod, kav rimoni bar mod, nami kemi lo chashive mafkalu. Oh, dilma, mishum nefisha tarchayu, because it's a greater effort to pick them up. That's why people don't come back for a kav of bar mod. If it's about effort, then kav tamrei bar mod, kav rimoni bar mod. When talking about dates and pomegranates over that period of time, they're larger fruits. That's what Rashi says. They're gassy. They're much bigger fruits, and the bigger fruits, it's easier to pick them up. The opposite of shumshimin, the opposite of sesame. Since it's not such worth, not such an extended effort, the person will come back to pick them up because he doesn't have to exert himself so much to pick them up. My, what's the din? The Gemara leaves it as a teku. Gemara leaves it as a teku here that they are unsure as to what the point of decision about when a person is mafka thing is. Is it determined by value, or is it determined by tircha? So determined by extent of effort the person will have to make to come back. So the Gemara leaves it as a teiko that's unsure as to which of these is driving the kav ba'arba amot. Right now, the Gemara continues here, a very famous machlok is between Abai and Rava. That is, if Yeush is the determining factor for that which makes the Aveda permissible for someone else to take, right, what happens? Or when do you need this yeush to take place? Do you need the yeush to take place immediately before you pick up the item? If the yeush isn't present before you pick up the item, then you're actually taking the other person's item. Because yeush is what makes it hefker, or yeush is what somehow detracts his ownership or reduces his ownership of the object, which allows the Torah to take it out of his possession and give it to you. But without that yeush, you're not going to be able to take it. Or the other possibility is that even if there's no Yeush now, but later time he will have Yeush on it, then maybe that's sufficient. So that's what the Gemara is asking here. Itmar, Yeush Shelo Midat. Yeush Shelo Midat means that I do not know that the object, the Aveda, is falling for me. Since I don't know that the object is falling, I can't have Yeush. Later on, I do find out, or I realize that I've lost the item and have Yeush. But in the interim, before I figure out that the item is lost and Yeush, the other person's already picked it up. That's what's called Yeush Shelo Midat. You've taken the finding party has taken possession of the item before the Balim are aware of the fact that it's lost, and of course before they could have Yeush on it. So Machlok is Abai and Rava. Abai Amar lo Abi Yeush. Abai says that's not Yeush. Rava Amar Abi Yeush. Rava says it is Yeush. So now the Gemara is going to qualify or narrow their Machlokas down. But Dover Sheyesh Basiman, if it has an identifying mark on or a unique characteristic by which the Balim would definitely look out to get, and would assume that they would get it back, in that case, Kuli Amar lo Plige to lo Abi Yeush. Everybody agrees. Rava, Abai, everybody agrees that there is no Yeush here, because you can't make a assumption that the person would have Yeush, and even Va'afagav D'shamine D'me'ayish, and even if later on we hear that he is Me'ayish, that's not indicative of what his feelings are about it all the way along, number one, and number two is that we look at this individual as being a Yotzei Chareg, as being an exception to the rule. Most people who have Simanim would not assume, and they would assume they would get it back, and they would not give up hope. So even though he's Shamine D'me'ayish B'sof, lo Aviyush, that's not Kerzeos, D'chiyat L'yadei, B'surahu D'at L'yadei, because the person who picked it up, when he picked it up, it still belonged to the original owner, and the Chiyad and when he finds out about it, generally people will not be meyesh it. Meima Amar, he's going to say Simana Ilei Begavei. I have ways to identify this item. I'll give those identifying items unique characteristics, and if I have that information, I'll be able to get my Aveda back, so I will not give up hope. And even this guy who does give up hope, that's unusual. Maybe he's a unique character. And even if he does give up hope, we only say that's prospectively that he gives up hope, because generally a person, we can't assume that he's giving up hope when there are Simanim in there. Now, the other rule, or the other place where they both agree, is Bezuto Shoyam or Shalito Shonar. Zuto Shoyam, Rashi describes as being what's called low tide and high tide. If someone leaves some object in the place where the high tide reaches during low tide, and then later on the high tide is going to come up and wash it away, then, or Shalito Shoyishnar is where the banks of the river overflowed. So in either of those cases, the person assumes that it's gone forever. The Avagav Deitbe Siman, even if the person has identifying marks, or unique characteristics, Rachman or Sharye, the Torah says it's out of his possession. Why? Could the Bini of the Mayim come on? We're going to explain this, again, in the later, the Gemara is going to explain this later on tomorrow's daf, because the underlying assumption is that which is avud from him, but found by others, that's where there's a requirement to Hashavah, and that's where there's no Yeush Balim. But over here, where it's lost from here and lost from others, meaning when the river washes it away or the ocean takes it away, the assumption is it's lost from everyone, that no one's going to find it. In that case, there's an automatic Yeush, the Torah signs automatic Yeush is mafkir, the object takes it out of possession of the owner. So where is their machlokes? Kiplige, bedavar shein bo siman. They argue over an instance when there is no siman, when there's no unique characteristic, there's nothing identifying about the object. So in that case, Abai Amar lo Abi Yeush. Abai says it's not Yeush. Taha lo yoda the nafal mine. You can't have Yeush unless you know about it. Since he doesn't know about it, there is no Yeush, and you can't take possession of it until there is Yeush. On the other hand, Rava Amar Abi Yeush. Abai says it is Yeush. The chi yoda the nafal mine miayish. Because when he finds out about it, he is miayish. As soon as he figures it out, as soon as he knows it's lost, he is miayish. Meimarma simana lately begave. I have no identifying mark or unique characteristic that I can share with someone to get it back. Therefore, maashto the miayish. Then retroactively, I have been given up hope. So that's just in explaining the Nukudat Machlokas, or understanding the Machlokas between Rava and Abai over here. Rava says that there is Yeush. Why is there Yeush? It's one of two possibilities of how to explain Rava's position. Either you have to say that we look at it as the Mafreya, when the person in the end is eventually going to see it, he's going to be Meyayesh, and therefore when he is sees it and is Meyayesh, we assign that feeling, or we assign that Machshava to his earlier period of time, even before he knew he was lost, and say that he was Meyayesh, because in the end we know that's what he's going to do, and since in the end that's what he does when he finds out about it, he does Yayush, and that he knows about it, he finds out about it, he's Meyayesh from it, so therefore we say that would have been the same reaction he would have had if he had known about it from the beginning, so therefore he's Meyayesh. That's one possibility in Rava. The other possibility in Rava is that since people in this position normally would give up hope, we say that we say the same, we assume the same thing for this Balim, and therefore they give up hope. The nafkamina between those two reasons is about whether you need the Balim actually to find out about the Aveda in the end. According to the first reason, it's the eventual knowledge of the fact that it's lost by the Balim, that they give up hope, and then we assign that hope retroactively, that hopelessness we assign retroactively, is only if he finds out about it. If he doesn't find out about it, we can't do that. But according to the second way explained Rava, that the issue is that normal people in this circumstance will give up hope. So we say the same thing to here. So here it doesn't matter if he finds it, knows it's lost, never knows about it being lost. This is just the general way that people feel. And because of that, we're going to assign that general feeling or general position to him. So those are two possibilities in Rava. Abaye argues and says, no, that you actually, two possibilities of why Abaye argues. Abaye can either say, right, that when you have Yeush, it has to be Yeush before out, has to be actual Yeush, that's when Yeush happens. We don't have this concept called Yeush B'koach. The possibility, right, in principle, in theory, you could have Yeush. In theory or in principle, that doesn't matter. It's only when it happens for reality. And that's prospectively for the time that he finds out about it. Before he finds out about it, he can't know have Yeush, because Yeush there is only theoretical. So that could be the possibility why Abaye argues with Rava and says there's no such thing as theoretical Yeush. Or the other possibility is that he might believe that there is theoretical Yeush. But over here, he says there can't even be theoretical Yeush. Why can't there be theoretical Yeush over here? Because we don't know how this person's going to react. Now, you can only say that we assign the person's feelings to the object or to something in principle or in theory when we know what his reaction is going to be. But maybe we don't know what his reaction. Maybe this person will be unusual and he'll really want to chase after and look very hard. Maybe he won't give up hope right away. So since we don't know for certainty what the reaction of this individual is, we can't assign him some theoretical Yeush. So that's the Nekudat Machlokes explaining the positions of Rava and Abaye over here. Now, the Gemara continues about the Machlokes. The Gemara is going to bring a number of braises or questions. Basically, the Gemara today is going to focus on Abaye, questions of Abaye. At the end of the daf and towards tomorrow, we're going to focus on some of the questions on Rava. So now the Gemara asks, first of all, Tashma. We have a case here. Perot Mefuzalim. Case in our Mishnah, we have fruits that are distributed or strewn over the Rishut Rabim. How lo yodah the nofa? How come over there you're allowed to keep them? The Balabayit obviously doesn't know that they fell away from him. Why? Because they fell. They're strewn over the place, means that he isn't aware of it. So where it says, Hamaravuk Rabachama Ocha Bimnachnashta the Bizre. Over here it's the Bizre, the Girsa that we have on the previous one was the Bay Dari. But again, these are these piles of fruit or areas where they gathered their produce together and then they ship them off or move them from that location. So what's left over is known. The Balim know what's there. They know they took away the major portion of it. They know what remains. So the only question about knowing what remains is what is their perspective on what remains. Do they give up hope, or do they just not give up hope, or do they say it's not worth my while to go back, or they say it is worth my while to go back, but they are aware of it. And because of that, we can explain that part of the Mishnah of Perot and Fuzarim as being the Bizrei Askina Daveda Midati. That is something that a person gives up or is an Aveda that he's knowledgeable about and gives up hope. Because when we say he doesn't want to go back, he's making a value decision or a tircha decision. He's making an effort decision to say it's not worth my while to go back, and that's why it's mafkir. So it's clear that the reason that he's mafkir here is through knowledge or through understanding of knowing what the situation is. So now, tashma, ma'ot mefuzarot. What are you going to do the next part of the Mishnah? Mishnah, what? Money that's strewn over the Rishut Arim. They belong to him. Amai, I lo yod enough on again, because it's strewn over the Rishut Arim. It's something that fell out of somebody's pocket. There's no knowledge of the fact that it was lost there. So why can you pick it up? Maybe he still doesn't know about it. If he doesn't know about it, then there's no Yayush. It's a question of Abaye. It's why it says, Atam Nami, Kid Rabbi Yitzchak. This is like the position of Rabbi Yitzchak, as we saw a Gemara at the end of Baba Kamo. Rabbi Yitzchak believes, Dama Adam Asur the Mishmish. The mashmesh b'kiso b'chol sha'ah v'sha'ah. Person generally is aware of something that's in his pocket. He checks his pocket. He checks the money or the coinage that's in his pocket on a regular basis, and he's aware of what's there. He always did this. When we looked at this Gemara in Baba Kama, he explained over there that it can't mean that every second he knows what's there, but in general, on frequent occasions, he will stick his hand into his pocket and see and count the change and make sure that there's coins there and ensure that the money that he's carrying around is still in his pocket. So because of that, he's going to be aware very quickly that he's lost the money. money, and therefore there's Yerush Balim over here, and it won't be a problem for Abaye. Hakanami, also in our case, it's Adam Asul Meshmesh Bekiso Bechol Shabashah. Tashma. What about Igulei Devela Bekikorot Shel Nachtum? Right, the pressed figs and the baker's bread. Hari Yelu Shalo, those belong to him. Amai, why should it belong to him? He has no idea that they fell, this bread fell away from him, or these figs fell away from him. Where it says, since they're so heavy, since they weigh so much, when they fall away from him, he's going to be aware of the fact that it's fallen away. Even though it may not immediately, that's why it's lost, but at least very soon afterwards, he's going to figure it out because the weight distribution has changed, or what he's carrying, the weight of it has changed. Now, if you look on the side of the Gra, Jay looks at the gear and says the rush is a different gear, which probably makes more sense because I wouldn't consider bread to be something very heavy, but rather he says the little chashive. They're over here that because they're chashive, that is why people are aware of them. Why are they chashive? Because they meet the meichel ninu. They're foods. Fruits and items that a person is going to consume, they're very aware of what they're carrying. And they're going to know very quickly if it's missing because it's something that they consume. It's not like today where they go to the supermarket and you buy huge quantities and put them in the refrigerator or the freezer. They didn't have refrigeration or freezers. When they bought something, they bought basically for the current or immediate need. And if that's the case, they would know when something fell very quickly out from them. So that probably the Russian's gear saw what the girl brings down. It seems to make more sense. Now, Tashma, Ulushanot Shal Argaman. What about in our Mishnah, the combed wool that has dyed Argaman or Elu Shalot? Aren't those? Why does he get to keep those? Amai Elo Yadon Enof Amiei. The person who's carrying this doesn't know that he dropped this item. Hatam Nami Agav Dechashive Mishmushe Mishmash Behu. So over there also, because he is important to him, they're expensive, it's a valuable item, he's always checking on them. That what did Rabbi Yechazel say before? That if you have money in your pocket, you're walking around, you're always checking to see what's there. I think the best analogy to this is if, so for instance, someone bought jewelry for their wife at some point in time. When you buy the jewelry for your wife, that is a very valuable item. So now you're going home and you're on the bus, you're taking it home for you. Every 5 minutes, you're sticking your hand in your pocket to make sure it's still there. Why? Because it's such a valuable item. Since it's such a valuable item, something that's meaningful and valuable to you, you don't want to lose it. So you always stick your hand in your pocket to make sure that you didn't pick it out, something fell out. You keep checking on the item that's in your pocket. So I would say that's the same thing of Rabbi Yitzchak. When Rabbi Yitzchak's talking about coinage, and when you're talking about these items like Lashon Shel Zohari, Shel Agaman, all these items, since due to their value or their importance, the person is aware on a regular basis of that which is in their pocket or that which they are carrying around, because it would be such a devastating loss to them if it was gone. They keep checking on these items. Now again, you could see this being difference between, for instance, today in a shekel and a 10 agurot piece. You have a child walking around with 10 agurot to 50 agurot, that's something that's important to them. If they were to drop that, that would be considered chashive. They wouldn't have yeush, even though katanim may not be, probably cannot have yeush, but just saying for them, in terms of their perspective on that money, that's valuable to them. On the other hand, a person walking around, an adult that's walking around, 10 agurot fall out of their pocket, they most likely have yeush on it. Versus if they have a 100 shekel bill that falls out of their pocket, that's something of significance, and they would not necessarily have yeush right away, or they'll be always checking their pocket. If you have 10 agurot in your pocket, I don't think you're going to keep checking your pocket to make sure the 10 agurot is still there. On the other hand, if you have a 100 shekel or 200 shekel in your pocket, you're going to keep checking that way. You pull your keys out, they don't fall out. So again, you have to do with the relative value of the object and the relationship to the person, whether they're checking. But the idea of Rabbi Yitzchak is that people on a continuing basis, when they have something of value in their pocket or carrying along, they're going to check it on a regular basis. Tashma. Now here's the case where Rabbi Yitzchak actually made his original statement. Motzei ma'ot v'bati knesiot u'bati midrashot. People who find money in the shuls and the base medrash. Mekom makom sh'rabim mitzuyim shem, or any place where there is a large traffic of people, a large quantity of people that move through there. Harei lo shalo, they belong to him. Mipnei sh'abali mityashimim. But don't give up hope. There's no simanim. Money is generic. Coins are generic. And therefore you have no simanim. Since you have no simanim, you're going to give up hope. This is a question of Abaye again. He doesn't know about the fact that it's fallen. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Adam Asul Meshmesh V'Kiso B'Chol Sha'as. This is the original statement of Rabbi Yitzchak, which we keep quoting above to use it in other instances, is to tell you what? That a person on a regular basis checks his pocket when it comes to these valuable items, and therefore he is aware of it. So all of these parts of the Mishnah here, again, more problematic for Abaye, because they all seem to be situations where the Balim are not aware of the lost item right away, and yet we say that you can keep it. The finder of this Aveda can keep it. How could that be if there was no Yeush yet? So what Abaye has to do is explain the Mishnah in instances, or in all these cases, he has to explain them in situations where the Balim would know about it very soon after losing it. Again, either because they're Chashuv, or because it's money that you check on all the time, or because because it's ochel, because it's food, and he checks on it, or because we said before the goren, that he makes a pile of fruits and he's aware of what he left behind, so therefore it's aveda midat. Whereas Tosfos points out over here that these additional items of gizei vanitzei pishta, gizei tzemer and nitzei pishta, which are not mentioned here, which are also mentioned in our Mishnah, how come those are classified as being falling right away and being yeush? So Rabbi will have to explain that's mishum diakri, because those are heavy. So as opposed to the Rosh's gear, so he says yakri, the heavy, is about the issue of food, right? Now that he says yakri is the issue of the commercial items that he's bringing, you know, the shearings of wool or the nitzei pishtan, those are too heavy. So again, there will be another exception to the rule, or of Abai's rule, where he says that balim don't have yeush until they know about it. Over here, rabbis will say they're going to know about it. For sure, we know they're going to know about it. Why? Because these are items that they pay attention to, either because of their weight, their chashivut, or because they're ochel, or because they're always touching their key, so they're struggling in their pocket to check for the money. And the reason they don't talk about the krichot in Rishut Rabbim, which is the last piece of the Mishnah, the one case in the Mishnah that's not mentioned over here, is because that's a case, actually, we're going to see in the Gemara, where it's munach. It was placed there. It's placed there. The issue of why their hefker is different than from the reason by the others, which is nefilah. By nefilah, when it falls, then the balim are not necessarily aware. And that's why a bai has to explain all these cases in a situation where the balim will be aware very soon after dropping them or losing them. Now, the Gemara continues now. Tashma, meimatai ko adam mutarim beleket. When are people permitted to pick up leket? Now, leket is one of the matnot aniyim, one of the things the aniyim are, one of the items of the tfuah, of the produce that the aniyim are entitled to. That's when you drop them. We had this in the end of the Gemara in the Baba Kama, also in the end of Baba Kama. B'sheyochu ba nimushot. Once the aniyim, the nimushot, that have come across these fields, we assume that the aniyim have given hope of collecting any more from there. They've been wiped clean, and then everything that's left or residual there is now considered a hefker. Ramin, my nimushot. What are nimushot? In the Gemara Baba Kama, I think Rashi over there only brings one explanation. Here the Gemara brings both machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan, Sari da Azle Atigra. Rabbi Yochanan says these are actually older aniyim that actually walk with the help or the aid of a walking stick or some sort of walker. So they walk slowly and bent over. They take their time collecting. They see everything that's on the ground. Once they pass through there, everybody knows that they're the last ones to get there. They're most thorough because they're going so slowly and they're looking down. So because of that, once they got through, no aniyim are thinking about going back to this field to collect. And therefore, any residual items that are left over are considered hefker. There are actually two shifts of collectors. There's the first set of aniyim that get through. Those are the early birds that come through and collect it. Then there's a second shift of the slower or the later comers that come and collect from the fields. Once the second shift has gone through, again, we assume that they've cleaned the field up. And once they've cleaned the field through, then there's no reason for the aniyim to come here anymore, and they're matyayish, they give up hope, and it's a hefker. Vamai, why should this, in all these cases, why should it be hefker? Why should you be able to take these items? Nehid aniyim dehocha miyayashay. Okay, fine. Matnot aniyim belong to all the aniyim, and all the Jewish aniyim. So, okay, fine. In our city that we're in, the aniyim gave up hope of getting it. Why? Because they see that the two sets have gone through there, or the older gentlemen have gone through there. Since they've gone already, they give up hope of getting it. But ika aniyim beduch tachrina. What about these aniyim in other cities who have no knowledge of what's clear through here? They've never given up hope, and they have some sort of ownership rights over here. Since they have some sort of ownership rights, how this is yesh lami dat? How can anybody explain this? So Mary says, no, imre kevin dik aniyim hocha. Right, since we have aniyim in our city, hanach mikara yushim miayish. Right, so they're going to give up hope first. V'ami aniyim da'atam lakdele. Meaning that if the local aniyim are already giving up hope, you think aniyim from another city are going to come now and not give up hope and not take it? No. What the aniyim here are basically proxies for aniyim all over the world. Since they're the most proximate to the leket and to the matnot aniyim here, they're aware of what's going on. If they give up hope, then certainly all other aniyim are going to give up hope, right? Because they're really the proxies or the shlichim of the other aniyim in that sense, because they are the ones who can make the best determination what's happening here. So once they've given up hope, we can assume that all aniyim have given up hope. So that's how Abai will explain this case. Now, we have another braiso, which is Tashma, Ktziot Bederech. Person finds along the way, so Mishnah Mash wrote that he finds out Ktziot are actually figs that were being dried out in the field. The way they dry out the figs in the field is actually sliced, they make a cut with a razor or a knife into the fig, and then they put it out in the sun to dry out, and they make the cut so that the liquid or the water that's inside will evaporate or come out of the fig, and when it is comes out of the fig, that will dry the fig up and make it into a dried fig. So these ktziot that are found on the way, they're on a derech, they're on a road. afilo betzatza de ktziot. And even if they're found next to a field that is covered in these ktziot, the person laid out all these figs out in their field, and there happen to be some that are distributed out on the road next to them. Or you have a tree, a fig tree that's hanging over the road. They find figs that are under it. Mutarot mishum gezel. There's no problem mishum gezel. You can take these items. Uptarot min maaser, and they're patur from maaser because hefker is patur min maaser. So here it has to be obviously before gemar malacha, before the time that one becomes chayv in maserot. And if it's before the time that you're chayv in maserot, you're mafkirit, then you're patur min maaser. But bezeitim v'charuvim, if they're olive trees or carob trees that are hanging over the road, asur. Over there, picking up the fruits is asur. So now gemar says bishlam areish. Abai can explain what each half of this brisa is good according to Abai. One's good according to Abai. One good according to Rava. What is that? The part of the brisa, the first part of the brisa, is good for Rava, because over there it says that there is a stam yeush even when they're found out on the road or when they fall off the trees and they find these tainim, you find these figs. We assume that there's yeush balim and you can take them. On the other hand, the second half of the brisa, which says by olives and carob, we say that you can't pick them up. So there it sounds like Abai, which says that we don't say there's stam yeush, and until the balim have yeush, the item is not hefker. So the first half sounds like Rava, the second half sounds like Abaye. So each one of them you have to explain. So that's what the Gemara says now here. Bishlam Reishal Abaye. Abaye can explain the Reishal that really sounds like Rava like this. Lo kasha, it's not a problem for him. Dagav dechashive mashbehu. Right, since they're important or valuable, he's always checking him up on them. Tainanami miyedadadi denatra. So too, when a fig falls off the tree, he's going to know about it because he's always checking up on it. Since these figs are of enough value, again, the same concept that we had when a person checks the money or the important item in his pocket, so same thing over here. If a person has important produce lying out in his field, something that he's counting on for his parnosa, or a tree that's giving off figs, which he considers to be an important part of his Parnasa, he's going to be checking up on a regular basis to see what's there. So therefore, on a very frequent basis, or very soon after the either figs fall off the tree, or the ktziot are missing from his field, or laying out, or they've fallen away from him in the road, he's going to be aware of that. And since he'll be aware of that, he'll have yeush right away. And therefore, we assume there is yeush, even though there is no such thing as yeush shalom idad, according to Abaye. Nevertheless, we'll assume there's yeush in this case, because they're aware of it, and they've given up hope. El is safe for the Rav Akasha. Good, the first part of the Braisa for Rav works well, but how is he going to explain the second half of this Braisa? The Ketani B'Zei there it says olives and carobs, when they fall in the street, they're asur. Why should they be asur? They should be fine, meaning that if they fall and the balim are going to give a hope, that's yesh lomitad, according to Rava, that's mutar. Samaribo, shiny zayit. Zayit is different, and olive is different. Hoyo v'chazuto mochiach alav. Because its look, right, is identifiable. Now, that's one gisa here. There's an alternative gisa over here, which says zeito mochiach alav. Either zeito mochiach alav or chazuto mochiach alav. They would mean different things. One of them is zeito mochiach alav, is that the fact that these olives are sitting right below the tree, it's clear that these olives fell from this tree. Meaning that you can connect, because of the proximity of these olives to the tree itself, that we can connect these olives to the tree, or we can know that these olives came from this tree. The other possibility of the gift is chazuto mochiach alav, is what the olive, the way an olive looks, is clearly identifiable. A balim can look at an olive and say it came from this tree, or I can identify it as being my olives. So that's what chazuto mochiach alav. But avagav denatrin, right, even though they fall off the tree, they know they're zayit, they know they're figs, they know they're, I'm sorry, olives. The chtad inish, inishu. Right? So either here the space of a person is he knows about, or the other alternative gear says the zayta de inish, inishu. That the olive of a man is his olive. So either it's because of the location, because it's under his tree, and that would be like the first gear, so which says it's zayta machiach alav. Since it's right under the tree, and the zayit's there, he's going to be aware of it, and because of that, he's not going to give up hope. He's going to know it's his. He's going to know that people passing by are going to know that it belongs to him, and they're going to leave it alone. Other gear source says chazuto, that the olive is clearly identifiable, is easily identified. A person can look at it. That's what the other gear says. That a person is zeito deinish inishu, that the olive of an individual, he knows his olives. Person who works with his olives, he knows his types of olives, and he can identify his olives. And that's the case. People know when they pass by and they see olives on the ground, that the balim are going to be able to identify them, and they're not going to pick them up, because balim do not give up hope of getting back their zeitim. So what I says, if that's the case, if people can identify fruits like carobs and zeitim, why don't we say the same thing by tainim? So yachar, if you the ratio, nami. Also in the ratio, should be the same thing. So I'm a papa, taina, imnifilata, nimeset. That a taina, a fig, when it falls, gets Nemeset. Now here again, there are two girsotos for springs. Now, one gear says Nemeset without an aleph on it, meaning Nemeset, no aleph in the word. Over there means that they're not similar to the ones in the tree. Meaning that once the Teinah falls and hits the ground, for whatever reason now, it doesn't have the same identity as those on the tree. The girsa that Rashi has, and the other alternative girsa in Tosu seems to make more sense, is Nemeset. Nemeset means that they get ruined. Since they're a soft fruit, they're a juicy fruit, when they hit the ground, they break, they let out some of their juices, they get sticky, they get ruined. So because of that, the Baalim give up hope. They don't assume that they're going to get it back, because either they can't identify them, or they're just not worthwhile, and therefore the people, the passerbys who come by and pick them up, they are classified as hefker for them. So now, again, Tosfos over here asks a number of questions on this last piece here. Part of them have to do with the Girsa, but he says, it makes sense, according to Abaye, this is what the Gemara is saying here, it makes sense according to Abaye, because since the fruits normally fall off the tree, people are going to give up hope of getting them back. So by Zeitin and Chavuvim, which are less likely to fall off the tree, they don't give up hope. So that's how Abaye is going to explain it, according to Tosfos, that has to do with the likelihood of the fruits falling off. If fruits are likely to fall off, then the Baalim, when they're checking all the time, know they're going to fall, and they give, and they miayish them. On the other hand, if the fruits don't on a regular basis fall, like Zeitim and Chavuvim that don't regularly fall, the Baalim don't give up hope, because they don't assume that they're going to fall. So now, why don't we say, if that's the case, why is the Baal HaBayit being affected by how the people passing by are looking at them? Meaning that the reason that the Baal HaBayit does not give up hope is because he says by Teinim a lot of them fall, and the people passing by are going to think that they're Efker, and they're going to pick them up and take them away. Zeitim and Chavim, since they don't fall on a regular basis, when the passerbys come, they're going to say, you know what, he doesn't know about it, he does not get Efker, they're going to leave them there. But why should what the people on the road doing, or what they're doing, whether right or wrong, it sounds like it might even be wrong that they're picking it up, why should that impact on the Baal HaBayit? That's what Tosfos asks here. Why, if the Ovei Drachim are making the determination, not the fact that they're sitting under a tree is making the determination, why should it even be Asur B'Zeitim Mechalavim? Why should it matter that sitting under an olive tree or under a carob tree? If the passerbys are going to pick them up, they're going to pick them up. V'yish lomar, Rashi Tosfos explains like this. That the determining factor here is not the people passing by, but rather the tree. But it has to do with the psychology of the owners over here. The fishes of Urim, they're going to think that these passerbys who are not always of the best quality of people, they're going to permit themselves to take it. They'll say, these fruits probably fell from somebody passing by, not from this tree over here. So that is, alright, that is true when it comes to Teinim, because they fall on a regular basis. On the other hand, when it comes to Zeitim and Charuvim, that because they don't fall on such a frequent basis, then the Ovei Drachim, those people that pass by, are not going to say that, it fell from somebody else passing by, because it's not so common that these items are found falling, and especially if they're found under this tree, that's such an unusual circumstance, they're going to say no. So therefore, the Baalim don't give up hope. On the other hand, when these Ovei Drachim come by and they see it under a Teinah tree, they say, I fell from somebody else who's traveling, just like me, not from this tree over here. The Gemara had to take it. It's because of that, the Baalim actually mityayish. Because of the misappropriation by the people passing by, or because of the lack of integrity of the individuals who are passing by, therefore the Baalim are miayesh from it, and then even the other people who do have integrity can take them now, because the Baalim are miayesh. And then we spoke about the different girsos in Tosu. So just to summarize here, because we didn't arrive in Rabbah when it comes to Yeush Lomidat, right, when the Yeush happens only after it's come into possession of the one who's found the Avedah, Rabbah says it's a good Yeush, but he says no. We asked from our Mishnah sequence of questions from our Mishnah on Abaye, because our Mishnah seems to indicate that all the Mitziot belong to one who finds it, and in all those cases they fell from the individual, so it's unlikely that he knew about it. So Abaye has to create situations in all those cases by which all those cases the owner is actually, or the person who fell from, is going to be aware of it very quickly. And that's either, we said before, either because it's chashuv, or it's ochel, or it's money that he's touching all the time in his pocket, or it's yakre, it's very heavy. All these things, all these circumstances which make it so that the person is going to be aware of it on a continuous basis or on a regular basis, so the yesh will happen very quickly. We talked about the case of the leket that the aniyim are collecting. Over there we said that the local aniyim determine for everyone, and therefore there is yeshuv. Here it's not a problem of yeshuv midat. Then last case over here, we brought a brisa that distinguishes or has a distinction between zeitim and chalvim versus teina. So Bai explained the difference between teina and zeitim and chalvim. He can explain that because he says that because teinim are chashuv, therefore people know about it right away when they lose it, and since they know about it right away when they lose it, then there's yeush very quickly. On the other hand, when it comes to chalvim and it comes to zeitim, since they're not as valuable and the person not paying attention to them as much, therefore there's no yeush balim because it takes much more time for them to realize that they're missing, so there is no yeush balim over here. Rava, on the other hand, is going to explain that there's actually a difference between perspective on these fruits. It has to do with the fruits of the zeitim and the chalvim are either easily identifiable or they are below the tree, and since they're below the tree that they fell from or that they can be identified in other places, the balim don't give up hope and people won't take them because they have in a sense a siman that's associated with them. That true would be true for teina as well, but the problem with teina is it's a softer fruit or it's a more delicate fruit, and because then when it falls it loses its integrity. Because it loses its integrity when it falls, the balim are mafkir because it's just not worth their while to pick up these messy figs afterwards, and they assume the ovrei derechim also will take them because the balim give up hope and they're happy and they will walk off with them and there's no siman left. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow with the sugya of Yeush Shalom Midat.